5-2 in the playoffs. James gets the first bucket. James on the flush. James drives past Green, gets to the rim and lays it in. James posts up and knocks it down. 13-point lead.
And welcome to the edition of the Poppin' Joe podcast, a special edition. And yes, from the top, it could be considered bittersweet. Bitter because none of us expected, well, I'll say none of us for Joe and myself, on how the Cavs have been doing well. But sweet because it's always nice to see Cleveland get close to a championship. So we'll see what happens there. But it's a special edition because we have in the house today, special guests, our brothers from Sports from the Six. Well, at least two-thirds of the Sports from the Six. We have Flip, and we have Ali Khan. How are you doing today, guys?
Just happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having us.
There's nowhere I'd rather be on a Thursday afternoon than with my brothers Flip, Joe Narsa, and Dario Pop Passarelli.
It's always nice to have the Sports from the Six guys here, considering every time we're all hanging out, we basically have a massive podcast of like 12 guys just talking a lot of trash. So it's nice to actually put this one on, not pen to paper, but like voice.
To Mike.
Voice to Mike. Nice.
There we go.
Joe, that's nice. What I do, man. We talk trash. That's, you know.
That's all it is.
It's my forte.
Well,
ooh, Matt Forte.
Speaking of talking trash, I'm going to go in the opposite direction right off the bat because I am not afraid to admit that I have not seen this coming in the NBA Finals. I didn't think that Cleveland had what it took. LeBron James alone couldn't do it, but I am sitting here stunned.
I think that's fair to say, Pop, considering how dominant the Golden State Warriors were throughout the season and the playoffs. But I won't lie. I'll throw a little bit of shout-out to our own podcast. A couple episodes ago on Sports from the Six, I was the only one saying the Cavs had a shot.
That is
true. And you know what? The only way that I thought they could win is exactly what's playing out right now. LeBron has put the team on his back.
No.
He's elevated the other players' play, and they're up in the series, so good for them.
I'm not with Flip on this one at all, and we've disagreed on it on the show many times. That's what makes
disagreement
the debate
in a podcast. No
entertainment. What? But you know what? LeBron James, and I've said this before, he's so good that he can single-handedly elevate you to at least be competitive in a series. And right now, we've seen everything go right for the Cavs. Guys like Dellavedova have stepped up. Eventually, when you run these guys 40, 42, 43 minutes, they will get exposed for what they are, and Dellavedova, don't get me wrong, he's had a great series, but at the end of the day, he's still Matthew Dellavedova, and we saw it in the second half of Game 3, what Steph Curry was doing, pretty much coming to life. We'll see if there's a carryover effect for that tonight, but the Warriors are by no means done. They are the best team in basketball on both ends of the floor, and ultimately, I think that's what propels them in this series.
Yeah, I mean, saying that they're the best team in basketball, I completely agree. It's just been a problem in that in these last two games, it would seem as if they're just not playing that way. And I think that's what's kind of interesting to watch, because as much as it is LeBron, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I may critique the guy more than anybody else, but he is definitely putting on a spectacle. It's fantastic to watch. But then you even look at Golden State and you're like, I feel like you got more in the tank. Like, this just doesn't seem like Golden State's giving it everything they got. Although, I'm not saying they're taking a day off. But I think the most interesting storyline I've seen with the Cavs' dominance has been throughout the playoffs, their record without Kyrie Irving in the lineup is really significant. Like, I'm pretty sure they haven't lost when Kyrie is not playing. And their defensive numbers go up significantly. And that's really interesting when they've kind of wasted the whole offseason looking for a big three when you just, I guess, needed LeBron.
It's a great point, Joe. And you know what? This man went to the Eastern Conference semifinals with a Cleveland team that included Daniel Booby Gibson. So
Booby.
Shout out Booby Gibson one time. But
NBA Finals.
The fact that his supporting cast has really elevated their play to what it is, I think just speaks volumes to the leader that LeBron is. And the man set the NBA all-time finals record for most points in three games. So he's bringing his A game every single minute of every game. And I just think if they continue to play that way, regardless of what Golden State does, it's going to be a tight series. And I'm hoping for seven games because I don't want this to end.
Neither do I. And I'm looking at it at two things that I see from this. In terms of how Cleveland is gone up ahead 2-1, I think it boils down to one simple thing. Tristan Thompson rebounding the ball offensively. Definitely. Give it back to LeBron James. We watch LeBron James bounce the ball for about 20 seconds and then him take a shot. He's fired up more shots than anybody has in the finals, I think, or getting close to doing that. But the thing is he's wasting time. He's keeping the ball out of Golden State's hand, and that's the only way to beat him. And I think if Cleveland winds up winning the series, you're going to have to start talking about LeBron James in the same breath as Michael Jordan because we know it's all on him.
No.
I still think you do. He's going to have the championships. He's going to have the play to match it. And one other thing, Joe, that we're going to disagree on, and I'm going to keep going back there again. The reason why LeBron James is so effective, the reason why we're talking about players like Dellavedova, it goes back to, as you call him, the babysitter, and I'm going to say Blatt. That defensive scheme, it's that style of play. This coach is out-coaching Kerr, period.
And it's tough for me to agree with that, simply because...
Thank you.
I mean, you have a catalyst like LeBron, and you see everything that he does. He is the assistant coach, if not the head coach of this team. What he says goes at all times. And let's not forget, a guy like Dellavedova, it was tweeted out a couple days ago, he had the 7th worst, I want to say, defensive rating in the entire league in the regular season. And he's done a magnificent job on Curry to take nothing away from him at all. But I disagree with the LeBron statement. I just think we don't have enough time on this show to really get into that and dive into that. But as far as out-coaching goes, don't think Steve Kerr hasn't sat there and tried. He's tried small. He's tried big. He's tried medium. Right now, the main problem is they're letting LeBron go early. And once that's happening, it's causing them a lot of fits on the defensive end. And we talked about before the series, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, how they have guys that can guard him for 48 minutes, and LeBron does not give – he doesn't care. Like, let's put it – it doesn't matter who's on him. He's attacking the basket.
Well, hold on. Maybe they are guarding him. What's his shooting percentage like? It's, like,
no,
very low.
No, it's been a low shooting percentage, and that's the thing, right? And I think that LeBron can average 40 points in this series. I think LeBron can average a triple-double in this series. And
which he's doing.
Right. And, well, he's close.
Close.
And the Warriors are still going to win. And that's simply because we've seen this with Golden State early. They're a team that they feel out the opponent. They feel out the style of play. We saw this exact kind of grind-out style with Memphis. And what happened those last 3 games of the series? They came guns out of the water to take that series. I would not be surprised, starting tonight, if we see something like that from the Golden State Warriors.
And I agree. I'm still hoping for a Golden State Warriors win. But, again, I had picked them in 5, and I did not expect the kind of fight that Cleveland's been giving them.
I think for some reason I was one of the few people to actually have belief in the chance that Cleveland won this series.
Our IT guy was all about that. What's his name?
Oh, that's my boy Al.
Shout out.
Yo, Al has the swaggiest NBA gear and he's on point. But anyway, my whole thing with this series is, you know, sometimes in sports where you just think a team is destined to win, you think it's their year. I just for some reason thought it was Cleveland's year, and the way that they've come out, the way of Golden State has come out and played is exactly how I expected them to. They're not ready for the moment. I know the team is amazing. They're going to be good for a lot of years. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are going to be hard to stop. But I look to a tweet from Kobe Bryant to sum up how I think this is going. Kobe says, quote, Cavs playing as if their life is on the line. Golden State playing as if they have more NBA finals down the line. This is now. Competition is everything. And that's exactly how I see this series unfolding. Cleveland's ready for the moment. They're playing die-hard basketball like there's no tomorrow. I'll take that killer instinct. Golden State doesn't have it right now.
Right. And as I said, doesn't have it right now. And the question is, can they get it in the last few games?
It's tough. It's just tough for me to sit here and say that Golden State doesn't have the killer instinct, simply because all season, 82 games, they played in a conference that was superiorly better than that of the Eastern Conference.
We haven't seen it in the finals, though.
And through the playoffs, they've come through. But that's the thing, right? This series is nary a half a series old yet. It's 3 games. If we're expecting it to go 7, if we're expecting it to go the distance, it's like a fight. For me, I see this as Cleveland's thrown their best punch. Now it's time for Golden State to punch back and react. They could have easily won all 3 games they've been close. Cleveland could have easily won all 3 games they've been close.
Agreed.
And that's spoken to the competition. So for me, when I look at a series overall and I'm evaluating it, I look at it in terms of depth and I look at it in terms of talent along with willpower. And honestly, I can't stray away from that. And I just can't see Golden State losing this series.
So before we let Pop and Joe get back to business here, how big is this game 4 tonight, boys? How big is this?
Hands down. This is the series, though.
Who wins this game, I think, wins the series.
For sure.
I mean, either way.
If Golden State wins it, the series is over. Then it's still a toss-up. If Cleveland wins it, then the series
100%.
Is over.
And like, I'm with Papa Joe.
Yeah. Thanks. Shout out.
I'm with Papa Joe, and I guess if that happens, that means I'm going to be collecting on a couple of Greek boy lunches, boys.
See, on AK's point about, you know, you can't really discredit Golden State yet, I think the reason why, though, and that I agree with him, is because I feel like Golden State is actually putting together the system they wanted to going into this championship. Like, I remember me and Pop were talking about Tyler Ennis, and he was talking about what it's like to guard LeBron James, and he, like, laughed, and he's like, you don't guard LeBron James. You just try and get in his way a bit while he does what he's going to do. And I think when you have LeBron James scoring 40 a night, yes, it's impressive, don't get me wrong, and it's fantastic to watch, but I think where Golden State's failing is that they're not shutting down the rest of the team. And they're not as impressive as any of the Golden State players. I mean, you look through the Golden State's bench and you get to the Warriors' like eighth guy and you're like, oh yeah, I'd take that guy over Dellavedova. I'd take that guy, other than in the last two series, but there's a lot of guys you take on that team even over Tristan Thompson. And I think that's where Golden State's failure is. I personally see you could have Golden State win a game, LeBron have 60 points, and Golden State could still win by 15.
Yeah, it's, you
and
know
it's,
what?
It's interesting. That's
it
really
is interesting,
and
you bring up another great point because, you know, we've talked about how we thought that was going to be the X factor. The Golden State bench is going to, you know, look at their bench compared to the guys on the bench on Cleveland. Like, you wouldn't even think twice about
right.
it. Like, it's a no-brainer.
Seven-man rotation right now for the Cavs.
It's a seven-man rotation for the Cavaliers. A lot of credit That's needs nuts. To be shown to those guys because Iman Shumpert, even Mozgov, these guys are relative unknowns, and you know what? They're playing amazing right now, and who knows, will it last?
Yeah.
You know, that's a big if, but I think what it comes down to really for me is I really didn't expect Steph Curry to come out and not really find his game. I know he caught fire there at the end of the game, and if I was a Cleveland fan, that's what conserves me the most, is because the games have been so close.
Yeah.
And he hasn't gotten his yet. So if I'm Cleveland, I'm a little bit worried about that, but at the same time, you've been able to shut him down, so you gotta, you know, take the good with the bad. And I'm just super excited. I don't think I've ever been more excited for an NBA game in my life, and I think that's being honestly said. I don't know how you guys feel about your excitement level for this game, but I'm pumped up.
I have a slightly different take when it comes to excitement. I'm very excited, but
Let's hear it, Pop.
I was very excited last year when I really loved to see San Antonio destroy the Heat. Don't know why. I just wanted the Heat destroyed, and San Antonio was masterful at it, and I was giddy, to say the least. But in this particular series here, see, I'm not sure whether it's, in terms of what's been happening with Golden State, whether it's their defense that's been the problem or whether it's their offense that's been the problem. Because yeah. It looks like their offense has been fluttering, it seems like to me, in terms of what's been going on. They haven't been able to get anything off. Anything that Curry has hit, he did get 24 points in the second half last game.
Yeah.
Yep.
How much of that was contested?
Yeah,
how
like, much look at his three-point percentage in the series.
That's
it's
a great
ridiculous.
Point, Pop. That's a great point, for sure.
So, again, it's like, what do they need to get in track in terms of to overcome Cleveland's defense?
Now, the one thing, and you make a great point, and I guess I'll just leave this as my closing thoughts
please,
on the series, is
we're trying to hit the court.
Yeah, right. It was a 20-point game last game when you saw Steph erupt. One thing that's gone relatively quiet is how good Klay Thompson has still been throughout this.
Yeah.
If the Golden State Warriors can get contributions from anybody, whether it's Steph, Draymond, who's been relatively quiet, if Maurice Spates can find himself on the court, if
Iguodala,
Bogut,
Barnes.
Right. That's the thing. They're so deep and there's so many weapons that if one, two guys get going even, the series is a wrap.
I'd have to agree.
I'll leave you guys with this. I think for tonight for Game 4, and I've been saying it for the past couple days now, if Golden State comes out and doesn't find that rhythm, and Cleveland continues to click, it's going to be like the sky is falling in Golden State. People are going to be calling for whoever off the bench. They're going to be shuffling lineups. Kerr's going to be rattled. And I think LeBron just cakewalks to it. Maybe not cakewalks to a win, but you know what I'm saying. I think they come out flat tonight. Cleveland's ready for the moment. Cleveland goes up 3-1. The series is done. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Pop. And, yeah, that's what I think happens tonight, boys. And I guess on behalf of AK and myself, thanks for having us on. And we'll shout out our brother from Sports from the Six, Dwayne Turner. Couldn't be here today, but thank you very much for having us on the Pop and Joe podcast.
Thanks, no problem, guys. Thanks for showing up.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And everybody, listen to the Sports from the Six podcast.
See, unlike, you know, the Warriors, we got a great lineup, and we always bring it. That's one of the things you'll find with us. We're just a bunch of Steph Currys. I don't know if Flip's a Steph Curry. He's a little small to be, a little too big to be a Steph Curry.
I'm more of a Shaq, baby.
Shaq, Daddy, Flip. See you later, boys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, guys.
I like you. I like you. I like you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting series, I got to say. It definitely didn't go down the way me and you thought.
No, it hasn't. I mean, obviously, Game 4 could be a pivotal game, and we'll see where that takes us, but definitely did not see the first three games going like this. And it really isn't the first time in the past 2 weeks
that we
were wrong, man, has it?
Man, I couldn't, like, even going into the NHL Cup Final, first of all, I mean, nobody saw that matchup coming, and I don't know why. I mean, when we had Jess on, me and her had a bet, and she was basically betting on the original six, and I was betting on the expansion teams. But it was either going to be the Chicago Blackhawks and the Rangers, or it was going to be Lightning Anaheim. And then, boom, this, you know, just came out of nowhere. And everything I thought, like I said, Hawks in five. Most people were saying Hawks in six, which is still doable.
Right.
But I didn't see this Tampa team being able to play this dominant. I mean, even last night they lost, but they sure as hell didn't lose on the score sheet other than...
Well, they lost on the score sheet.
Well, yeah, but the stat line, then I would say. They didn't lose on the stat line because, I mean, Chicago had 17 shots. And it wasn't like Vasilevsky let in crappy goals. I mean, the kid played well. It was fantastic to watch to see how this team is pushing past Chicago a lot of the games. But I think, like you were saying last time we talked about this, I think it is Chicago's ability under fire to always be the first man out of the trench. And I think that's what's happening in this series.
I'd have to agree. I mean, we'll go to last night. They win 2-1. Nobody looks at them and says, yeah, that was a convincing 2-1 victory.
No, not at all.
Both of their victories in this series, now that they're tied 2-2, have been underwhelming, to say the least. And I'm watching last night's game trying to figure out why. Like, what's this young Tampa team doing to this veteran presence? And it isn't the goalies. What I looked at it, especially in that first period, is the Chicago's defense. I know there's heavy, heavy minutes played on your top four defensemen.
Right.
And then with Oduya being hurt, he did play last night.
Yeah, he looked pretty good last night. But
he did play, but he is, I mean, mind you, all players are hurt. That puts a lot more strain on Duncan and Seabrook. I think Duncan played over 30 minutes again.
Yeah, the guy's like made a steal.
And the worst part is you have the Van Riemsdyk, the kid.
Yep.
And they brought in...
Comiskey, but he's injured now.
But even for something like Van Riemsdyk, like, he was on when Killorn scored. The problem is he gets a shift every 5 minutes, which means he's sitting on the bench for 15 minutes of real time.
Yeah.
That your legs are just shot. Like, yeah. How can you skate under those circumstances?
But granted, that goal was fantastic. It was like that goal seemed like something out of the 90s.
Yeah.
Or like late 80s, you know, like Gretzky behind the net, no look behind the back, like in front, goalies looking the opposite way. I mean, he kind of got everybody, you know, stuck in their tracks. But I agree. You look at their defense in Chicago, they do look a little slow-footed. And that's something that's different. I mean, I was speaking to somebody and saying, you don't see the same tenacity in Chicago in this series that you have in the other series they've played. I mean, watching them play LA or Anaheim or San Jose or whoever they're playing, it's like you see them streak by a guy, go crash into the boards, grab the puck, another guy crash into the guy who got the puck, and so on. In this case, you see them kind of maybe turn away from it, try and get back a little quicker because they know if they get caught deep, they got to skate back a little more. But I mean, I think a part of it is credit to what Tampa is doing in the neutral zone. I mean, Tampa is very fast, but they're also very fast to get back and choke up the middle. And I think that's the thing that's hurting the Blackhawks the most. You see, even when Kane has the puck, for God's sakes, Kane doesn't have any space. And Patrick Kane makes space.
For himself, exactly.
So you see them trying to get the puck through the blue line, through the neutral zone. It usually is a dump-in. Granted, it worked a little easier with Vasilevsky in that he doesn't, you know, play the puck as well as Bishop. But the dump and chase isn't going to work against a guy like Bishop. And the way they're clogging up the neutral zone, that's not working. But, I mean, kudos to Chicago because they're grinding it out. While when Tampa's winning, it looks a little bit more deserving, I have to say.
Oh, it does. And I think one of the things that looking at, if you go back to Game 3 on Tampa's victory and their game-winning goal, you mentioned about the defense being slow. And I think that has a lot to do with it. They are, because they can't keep up, what they wind up doing is they don't meet them as they're crossing the blue line. And they start falling back and back. And the unfortunate thing that it does is it gives them space. That's why Hedman was able to skate, you know, literally almost all the way into the corner with nobody on him because they were afraid of his speed. Boom, pass it out in front, and there's
that guy
a tip and
skate,
shot.
Man.
He can. And I think it puts the heebie-jeebies into the Chicago defense.
Yeah.
And offensively, when you have such a rookie goalie, regardless of how you think he's going to perform or not perform, when you have a rookie goalie playing in his very first or starting very first Stanley Cup game, how do you not crash the net? How do you not cross the blue line and just take a shot?
Yeah.
I mean, they had, what, two shots an entire first period? Two? You're not going to win very many games when you do that.
No, I know. I mean, it's kind of intriguing, though, because whenever I hear a commentator saying, like, oh, get a shot on the guy, you know, like, test him, it's a little, it could be vice versa, because you could argue that Vasilevsky not getting a shot for 8 minutes could cool him down and make him more nervous. But I don't think that's what Chicago was trying to do. Chicago was trying to get it on net, and Tampa just weren't letting it happen. And, I mean, they have a lot of willpower. They got a lot of fight in those little guys, and it's amazing to watch considering, I mean, I didn't think Tampa had this level in them. Everybody's playing a very pro-style game, and they don't look like an Eastern Conference team. And I think that's their biggest credit in this series, that you see Tampa block shots. You see them slow down the puck in the offensive zone. You can tell the way they're, you know, they're coming back on D. They're not running and gunning like we assumed they would. I mean, that's why you gave them probably the better chance between them and the Rangers, because, you know, they're the, you know, the gunslingers.
Yeah.
But more, they're probably playing more of Chicago's game than Chicago is, and Chicago's playing more like the LA Kings in that they're just capitalizing on a chance and trying to sit back and get another chance. It's not the dominance I imagine, and it's very intriguing. I mean, I still think Hawks in six, but if it's Bolts in seven, I wouldn't be too surprised at this point.
Well, I look at it this way and go, and I'm not sure if this is the reason why I gave the Lightning a better chance than the Rangers, but it's like this is a story unfolding, and somebody forgot to tell the Tampa Bay Lightning, hey, by the way, guys, you're the young ones here.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to be not playing in a composed fashion. You're supposed to be nervous. Chicago's supposed to win those battles. Like, somebody forgot to tell Tampa this. And if the Rangers went in there, they would have went, yeah, we're expected to lose. That's it. No problem. End of story. But Tampa Bay, they're playing phenomenally well. We agree. They deserve to be where they are in the position. Maybe they're a little unlucky. Maybe they should be up 3-1. And be interesting to see what happens on Saturday. One thing that I have noticed is that with regards to both teams, it doesn't matter in terms of home ice. I think they've been fairly even both ways in terms of winning on the road and at home. However, both teams combined now are 21-2 when this playoffs, when they score first.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So that is, you know, going to be the important goal. Funny enough, though, now with last night's game, the last 10 Stanley Cup playoff games, 7 of the winners have come back.
Wow.
So, you know, yes, you might score first, but at some point you might be losing. Regardless, I have no idea in terms of what those stats mean in terms of a comparison. But at least for this playoffs, we know that if they score first, chances are you're going to win.
I mean, there's one thing that really fascinates me with Tampa is that they've gotten 2 games off of Chicago, and Stamkos still hasn't scored. I mean, I did not see that coming.
No.
Like, I saw, you know, the triplets are fantastic, but I felt like they would get neutralized, which they really have. Like, Alex Killorn has become a monster. in the Cup final. And the fact that Stamkos, Kane, and Taves have amassed one goal.
And one assist, and if I'm not mistaken. Assist, I don't think Kane got has any points this series.
It's
I could
ridiculous.
Be wrong.
I mean, Duncan Keith has, I think, two assists at the most. And I think one of them is a secondary assist, like on a power play. Like, it's just, it's fantastic to see. Like, you look at the scoreline, it looks like an AHL hockey game. You're like Teuvo Teravainen, you're like Alex Killorin. You're seeing all these guys that are just like depth players that are showing up because it's almost like all the positives are canceling each other out. And it's going to be down to the third and fourth line. And that might be where home ice advantage matters because we saw what Paquette's line did to Taves and vice versa. We're seeing what the third and fourth line have been able to amass when they're playing against Tampa. I mean, Versteeg's line looked pretty solid. So,
but maybe in agreeing with your point, taking it a different way, you know, maybe it is Chicago's time now because Taves and Kane haven't played well for four games. I know Taves got the opening goal yesterday, but overall, I mean, I remember that first or second shift watching him go into the corner, and I forgot which defenseman it was, but Taves went to give him a solid hit, you know, get the crowd going. And it was Taves that fell back and onto the edge. So, like, there's something off with his game. And so Chicago can look at it and say, you know what, we're tied 2-2, and we've played, like, absolute crap these first four games.
Right.
If we play our game, we should be fine. And I still think that can happen is, you know, we both agree to come in six. But how much of it is them playing like crap, and how much of it is Tampa Bay not allowing them to play their game?
Yeah, I have to say I gotta give it a little bit more to Tampa. I really do. I mean, I don't see, like, it's Chicago doesn't look like they're slacking. It doesn't look like they're disinterested. It literally, they're trying to play their game, and Cooper and his boys are really shutting them down. But it's funny, the last time the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, the series went the exact same way. So they lost game one, won game two, lost game three, and then won game four, five, and six against the Bruins. So they've been in this position before. So we'll see what they can do coming up in the Saturday. I think I like this break in between the Cup final, only because maybe, like you were saying, the reason why Taves looks off and Kane looks off, even Stamkos, they might be nursing something.
Well, not might be. I think, like you said, every player is hurt.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not just saying like you know, broken bone or something like that, but, you know, bruised up for sure and banged up for sure and aches and pains. It's a grind.
For sure.
It's an absolute grind, especially when, you know, they've gone both games to game seven in the previous series. So it's a lot of hockey to expect. One thing, though, like, wow, both of these finals, NBA and NHL, I mean, it's just...
It's awesome to watch.
It is, especially since we're in a position going, these are not going anyway. We expected them to go, and so it's more of a surprise. And, you know, I think that's the one reason why we love sports so much, because you just don't know.
Right, and this has been, like, I think this is the surprise edition of the Pop and Joe podcast. We had a surprise Sports from the Six, you know, inclusion. We're surprised that LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers are winning their series. We're surprised that Tampa can hold their own against such a formidable opponent. But I gotta say, biggest surprise of all, how the hell are the Blue Jays on an 8-game winning streak? And their ERA looks decent in those games.
Okay, now that's where my surprise is.
Right?
Is their ERA looking decent?
Yeah.
Their 8-game winning streak? No. This is old school. I mean, last year, it was May, they had that absolutely incredible...
Yeah, they went like 12.
Like 21 and 5, or they had like a 19
game... Yeah, they had like a 5-game lead in the division.
Right, and their May was unbelievable in terms of their winning percentage, and then they started trailing off around August. So my guess is now that it's in June that this winning streak is being put together, that we're looking at maybe September now for the
fall. So we get real September baseball in Toronto?
For a week or two, but then it's going to be even more disappointing because it's closer to the end. But even with their great, I mean, they still haven't made up that much ground on the Yankees.
Yeah.
They're not far back. I think it's, what, 3-4 games that they're still out of it. But we want winning baseball in Toronto. And so, beggars can't be choosers. We haven't moved up at the first, but they have been winning.
Yeah. Like, they've been very infectious to watch. And I think that's really all you can really ask of this team anymore. Because watching that game on the weekend, coming back and winning, and it's just been like this entire stretch, it hasn't been a dominating 8-game winning streak. It's been more like a clutch 8-game winning streak. Like, first of all, Josh Donaldson, my God, is that guy good. Like, that guy is just fantastic. Like, every time he's up to plate, I'm like, yeah, he's going to do something good.
You have that feeling. You have
fantastic.
That belief. Yep. He makes you believe.
Right. And then I got to give credit to Jose Reyes. I mean, he's come under scrutiny. Yeah, he got caught almost stealing again. He got caught in between two bags last afternoon. But he's hitting fantastic. He's doing his job. Jose Bautista is busted up. He's still hitting it out of the park. Encarnacion hit a home run.
That was funny.
And then he was like, please God, don't touch my shoulder.
It was a walk-off home run, and he's rounding third base, and he sees the mob waiting for to grab him. And he goes, no, my shoulder. That was funny.
You know, but then the best part is the next game he hit a home run, and then he's like, okay, Gibby, I'm done. Like, I did my job. My arm's hurting. Please let me sit down. And they're fun. And if that's the team that we're going to get the privilege to watch, I'm okay with that. It's nice to see the team rally. Not to win, but just rally around each other. When a guy scores the game winner, they're all out there. You see them talking in the dugout. You see them enjoying themselves. They're enjoying playing baseball.
Life is always better when you're winning.
Exactly. But it's interesting because I felt like you were seeing their game kind of turn right before they went on this winning streak. They had a couple good games right before the Washington series. I think, I can't remember who they were playing right now. It's throwing through my mind. They were playing good baseball. They were losing tight games. Losing tight games hurts, but you know you're doing something right. And I got to give them credit there that, yeah, okay, they lead the league in like most lost games in one-run games. Yeah, but I think that's a credit to the fact that they're keeping themselves in games, even knowing they have that offense. I mean, that's the toughest thing to do, to always bring your offense. I mean, they have the best offense in baseball, but to be able to maintain it is going to be tough. So I give them credit for that, and I feel like there was a little bit of a turn, and you can see now they're kind of watching the fruit of their labor, and it's fantastic to watch.
Well, I look at it and go, their record now, they've reached 500, right? They're 30-30 or 31-30. It took a while to get there, and I look at that, and it doesn't surprise me that they've reached that level 500. I'd expect them to be there. Maybe it's a little, like I said, surprising that it's not as a bit higher than we thought it might have been. Second, third in the division, again, you know, a little bit surprising. It just seems that we've been through battles already with this team, and the one stat that stares me in the face and slaps me across the face several times is, we still have 101 games to go.
Right.
There is like so much baseball left to
still
play.
Still early, man.
Exactly. And that's, you know, when they start talking about the grind, it really is a grind, and compared to any of the other sports, it's unbelievable in terms of how much we've already seen of this team, how much growth, how much, you know, it went up and went down, and now it's on a nice swing up again. And it could all mean nothing. Because there's still so much baseball left to play.
Yeah, that is true.
The flip to that is that they can get even better because there's so much baseball left to play. So it'll be interesting to see this. You know, I think one thing that would get the crowd over even more is if we see some of the young arms come back and they do well and they keep adding to this winning. I don't see it happening. I don't see this winning streak continuing in that manner. The good thing is that the American East is so horrible.
Yeah.
That, you know, they have a chance. But I don't think anything's going to come from this team. Not the way it's structured.
See,
still too many flaws.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the one solution, though, that the Jays might have staring in their face that I don't think they're taking advantage of is, I don't know if you saw, did you watch the game yesterday? Okay, so the Jays had called up pitcher Scott Copeland.
Okay, that's right. They wanted to give
Sanchez
a couple days off and keep everybody else in the rotation. Yeah,
right.
I heard about that.
Now, this guy came up, and he was like the most textbook, like absolute textbook ground ball pitcher I have seen in a long time in a Blue Jays uniform. Realistically, we haven't had many since Roy Halladay.
Jimmy Key was probably the best.
Right. We've had more of the strikeout guys in the last, you know, little while. And knowing that you have a guy like that in your rotation in AAA, knowing you already you still have Norris down there, and the fact that you still have Castro down there, can't that just be a bullpen?
And again,
you know, like, I mean, I'm not going to come out and say, like, I understand baseball has a lot of old adages. You just can't turn a starter into a bullpen guy. I don't care. I really don't care. When I think about it, is Norris ready? Eh. He's got a lot of talent. Is he ready? I don't know. But you don't think he could throw a little harder for two innings? And then, you know, you could use him two nights after. So it's interesting because their rotation hasn't been bad. Even in the last, like, even though they've been losing, like, you look at R.A. Dickey, his run support has been terrible. I mean, Dickey,
He gets burned.
He does. And I do have some fun with him every now and then because, you know, I do say he doesn't kind of accept his losses very well. But I don't think I've been pinning many on him these last couple weeks.
No.
And Burley is Burley. Like, the guy is just steady Eddie. He does his job. But he gets a lot of run support. I mean, it's interesting. Hutchison, too. Hutch gets run support. He's 5-1. He's got an ERA of 4.9. I mean, you got to get runs.
Yes, to be that way.
Right? So, I mean, if you look at what their starting rotation is now, with Sanchez playing pretty solid, what if you just move those kids up, put them in the bullpen, try that?
I mean, I have no idea. I have no idea in terms of how effective that'll be. I do think, you know, somebody like Norris might be more suited to it because your relievers are usually somebody that can throw heat.
Right.
You know, go back to Copeland. I forgot what his line was. He was 7 innings pitched. He had 6 hits, 0 walks.
Yeah, on 92 pitches.
And I mean, like
he
you
was
said.
Clean. It was a clean clean game.
When you talk about, you know, ground ball pitchers, and I said I brought up Jimmy Key. Yeah. I remember one game that nobody else will remember, but I do. It was a 1-0 loss by the Blue Jays. It was late in the season. Jimmy Key pitched 9 innings, 1-0 loss. He gave up a solo home run shot. 2 other balls were pop flies. Those were the only 3 balls that ever left the infield in a 9-inning game.
That's ridiculous.
That's how good he was, and he got the loss. Always will remember that stat.
That sucks.
3 balls leaving the infield, one of them just happens to be a solo home run, and they lose 1-0. Kill me.
That just sounds like the ultimate Blue Jay loss.
Par for the course for this team, par for the course for any Toronto team.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd love to see Copeland go in there. Was it a one-time thing? Who knows?
For sure, yeah. He's not your Messiah yet.
And I'm forgetting the young stud that they gave up in the R.A. Dickey.
Man, there's so many. So there's,
The one stud who just recently started or a couple of weeks ago, and he got the win, and everybody's...
Syndergaard.
Syndergaard, that's right.
Yeah, that guy also hit a home run that night.
And you know what? Man, can the Blue Jays draft good pitchers. And I still think...
Have we kept one?
I still think we've got a lot in there. And you know, I hate to say, you know, next year, because obviously the longer we go on,
yeah,
our pitching is going to improve.
Yeah.
But our offense, we're going to have to buy.
It's true. I mean, like, you make a funny point, because I've been looking at, like, stat lines and whatever, and at fantasy baseball, and it's making me sick, because, like, Henderson Alvarez out of the Miami, that was a Blue Jays prospect. He's wicked. Like, he's really good. Then you look at Noah Syndergaard, and you're like, there was a reason he was the number 3 rated prospect in baseball. In baseball! When we traded him. And, I mean, it just hurts so much when you look at the rotation, and it's like, if I didn't have Burley and Dickey, I would have had Syndergaard and Henderson Alvarez along with Sanchez, Stroman, Hutchison, Norris. We haven't even seen Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah. And you know, this is not a knock on Double A.
It's not a knock.
Because there's a move you had to make.
I don't disagree.
You traded Syndergaard for pitcher of the year, for a Cy Young winner.
It's true.
And not, 10 years ago Cy Young winner. It was the previous year Cy Young.
Right.
Not a knock on him in terms of the trade itself.
It just sucks.
What if? It's just one of those things. You trade a prospect, you don't know. You don't know what they're going to be like in the majors. You don't know how they're going to adapt. And Toronto luck, guy's going to be a star. Just like we said last week, that third round pick that Detroit got because we got
Stud.
Babcock, he's going to be a star.
Stud. Next
we just
Datsy.
Know it's going to
yeah,
happen.
Absolutely. So before we end off, do you think now that the Jays are on this winning streak and the team looks to have found something, I don't know if it's going to stay there, but do you think this could be the tipping point for fans, the team, and Anthopoulos? And do you think, I don't know which way that works. I don't know if the fans demand more of the team, therefore Anthopoulos should make a move, or if Anthopoulos does or doesn't, the team will be affected severely and the fans could either love or get sick of this.
No, I don't think it's a tipping point at all.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it goes back to number one, you still have 101 games to play.
Right.
And number two, been there, done that. We've been here before. We've been here last year.
But
Anthopoulos
doesn't do much in the midseason.
No, I know. But I said, even last year, there was even more of a reason for fans to be excited. We were in first place. We were in first place by 4 or 5 games. We were first place for a couple of months. There was a lot more to be excited about. Where we are right now, yes, it's a crappy division. Is there going to be pressure on him to do something? Yes, there is. And it goes back to the same thing. Wait till we get to the All-Star break. See what's available. I hate this Toronto mentality I've adapted. Being from Toronto, maybe I've grown into it. But you have what looks like to be a large group of decent young players.
Yeah.
That are just on the bubble coming in.
Don't screw it up.
We've seen the Leafs, right?
Yeah.
We've seen the Leafs and always do it. They'll trade them away for whatever old veteran they can to try and make a push, and it never works out for them. I'm not saying that it wouldn't work for the Blue Jays. I'm just saying don't mess it up.
Yeah, it sucks. We were saying about those trades with Syndergaard and Alvarez. What did the Jays get for Roy Halladay? Who knows? We got Kyle Drabek, and now he's with, the Padres or something.
Yeah, and I forgot
the
who the main rookie that we got.
That was Drabek.
Oh, it was Drabek?
Yeah. It's like when the Blue Jays trade the best pitcher in baseball, they get apparently a bag of bats. And when the Blue Jays trade for the best pitcher in baseball, they've traded away two of the best pitchers. It's just so frustrating.
I'll be curious to see what happens with when Batista comes up next year.
Yeah. Hopefully Booster Juice pays him extra.
I'm sure he's making a ton from that.
Hey, he better be. The guy's crushing fruit. People can eat that fruit, Jose. Stop crushing the fruit. We get it. Well, it's going to be interesting. We're just as confused as you are. So, maybe you'll be the next surprise for our show.
So, yeah, we'll have to see in terms of what they do going Blue Jays. Just a couple of things to touch on because it's been an absolutely unbelievable week of sports. And, we've had American Pharoah win the Triple Crown, which I know you're not a big horse racing fan.
Don't care.
I'm not a big horse racing fan.
Thank God.
But
do you care?
I do.
Really?
I do because
I don't care.
Well, it's the story, right?
But okay, who's the story about?
It's about a horse.
Right. Okay. I think that's my issue.
But the fact is, no horse has done it since 1978. That to me is a story. When there's only been 12 horses in history to ever accomplish a feat.
Thank you, Tim Haffey, for that information.
It is something to behold. In that class, I think I was the only one alive the last decade that somebody that a horse, and it was funny too, because in the 70s, there's three horses that did it in the 70s.
Serious?
Oh, yeah.
Were they on the juice?
You know, it may have been.
Probably.
But it gets to the point where, you know, we'll see what happened. But not only that, we had another big story with the World Cup in Canada, Women's World Cup Soccer, yep, starting. Kudos to Christine St. Clair and the Canadian
that
team.
That woman is stupid clutch.
She is.
Like, and she looks like a beast, too. Like, you see her, and she's never smiling. She's just so angry.
This reminds you of Taves?
Yeah,
like Captain Sirius? Like, yeah. No. Taves, this is Captain Sirius.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I saw her go up to the spot, I was just, it was weird. I had the same confidence I have when I see, like, Ronaldo or Messi go up. You're just like, oh, yeah,
it's in.
Barry.
Like, she was nervous.
She didn't show it. No. She didn't look nervous, that's for sure.
So, I mean, and then
they take on New Zealand today.
Should be interesting. I'm looking forward to that game there. A couple of other high notes, I guess. You have like an absolute drubbing. Germany was at 10-0 or 10-1.
Hey, man.
It was. They're number one in the world for a reason, right?
Well, here's some stats breakdown, because Germany, for one of our assignments, I had to do the stats. Yeah. In qualifying, they scored 62 goals in 10 games, and they only allowed 4. And two of them came in one game. So they only let in goals in 3 games out of the 10. They scored 6 goals a game, basically. And they were 8 out of the 10 top goal scorers in qualifying were German. And that's not even looking past the extra 4 or 5 that went down to like 15. So they look fantastic. All the odds are on Germany and the United States. But it'd be cool to see, you know, Canada get a little farther. But I'd be really, really saddened to watch Germany like just shellack anybody
else
in Canada, because it would suck.
It would. And then I said, I think after that 1-0 victory, and hopefully a victory today, would solidify at least them making out of the group stage, which I think would be great. And then we'll have to see what they do in round of 16, and then the quarters, and you know, that's all sugar going on for there. So, I mean, that's been an incredible thing to follow.
It sucks you can't feel the excitement because it's in Montreal and Edmonton and, you know what I mean? It sucks that it didn't come here, because it would have been nice to understand what the feeling is like. Like, it looks really cool. I just wish I could absorb some of the electricity around that.
And then, and for the rest of Canada, this is not Toronto being Toronto-centric, but when you have a stadium like BMO Field, how can you not? How can you absolutely not have
any
group there?
And isn't it the Canadian soccer field? Isn't it the Canadian national field?
Yes, and even when you're looking at things like...
That's amazing.
You know, and I said, not even having to have Canada play here, because we have such a multicultural city, more than practically any other, other than maybe Vancouver, how can you not? Like, I mean, I know the Pan Am Games here, but between it, it's just absolutely decision-making at its absolute worst.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't even bring up Sepp Blatter when it comes to soccer.
No.
In this situation. And we're not going to.
Look at that.
But more soccer on Saturday, my beloved Juventus.
Oh, I apologize for that, man.
You know what? I am still proud of what they did. They themselves, I don't think, believed they expected to get as far as the finals. And having watched Barcelona in the Champions League all year, there was no one, no team, nowhere that's going to stop them. This is the best soccer team on the planet, period. No matter how else you slice and dice it, they are so far better than everybody else. It's unmanageable in terms of how good they are.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I have a couple friends that are, you know, Juventino, and they were telling me like, oh, no, well, they're going to play pretty decent. I'm like, guys, I'm telling you, they're going to lose 3-0. Would they lose 3-1?
Yes.
Like, the third goal really didn't count. It was like the last minute. Who cares? The game was dead by then.
No, and losing 3-1?
Well,
Juventus played well.
Yeah.
They played very well. I mean, they were tied 1-1 going up into the 69th minute.
Right.
What more can you ask for?
For sure. I mean, the thing for me was that I think Juventus's win against Real Madrid did give a lot of Juventus fans some false hope, thinking, you know, you can, you know, knock down one Galactico, can you knock down the next one? And what a lot of them failed to realize is Real Madrid's an all-star team, but Barcelona's a soccer team. And I think that was the key, where Juventus, they're basically, you know, Italy in a different jersey. They play the same system. They've had the same structure to their game forever. And they have a very, very mobile midfield. Not as much, I mean, like not quick, but the way they move the ball, that midfield can get you open.
And they can stifle
right
other people's offense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with a guy like Buffon, who I think is very close to being done. He's not what he was, but
oh, definitely not.
Still a top 15 goalie in the world.
And he made such incredible saves in the finals too. Oh, and yeah. In that final game, they missed Chiellini a lot. You know, it might have made a difference. Might have made it 2-1.
Was he scared of Suarez biting him again?
Could very well be. Hmm. Could very well. It was a calf injury, so yeah. Shoulder calf. I'm not sure. You know, fairly close. But I look at that game and go, yeah, there was not something. When you have a 3 of the top 10 scorers in the league, and they play so well together and pass the ball that, you know, like I said, it's just unbelievable how they're unselfish, and there was no denying them that day. But, like, you know, kudos to Juventus for getting that far and, you know, being the second best team in the world.
Yeah. I mean, tough test to be able to get through Barcelona. That's why nobody's been able to do it. I mean, they got the treble, right? Copa del Rey, yeah. The La Liga, Champions League.
And I think if
they probably won a World Cup.
And if I'm not mistaken, they're the only team to have got the treble twice.
Okay, yeah, because the last team to do it was Inter, if I'm not mistaken.
No, well,
a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, they won the Coppa Italia.
That's right. It was after. That's right. No, because I was getting confused because the last time Barcelona did it was 2009,
which makes them the only team to do it twice.
Right.
Boom.
Right.
Boom goes the dynamite.
So yeah, no, it was good. Unfortunately, to end to most of the soccer season, other than the women's that's going on,
and then men's league soccer.
Actually, well, no, not really, because there is MLSE, and as much as we laugh at it, Jovinko 2 weeks in a row player of the week.
Yeah.
And he's been putting on a show.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God. Those goals and the moves. And, you know, he would have had more, except his own players get in the way of his own shots at times.
Well, because he can't always score.
He's had, what, 6 goals and 6 assists or something like that. He's been much more than I ever expected. So, and like I said, not only winning, which is nice, but entertaining to watch as well.
Well, I'm excited to see New York FC now with Pirlo going over and...
Do you know when he's going over?
I don't know. I mean, I would probably assume he's going to lick his wounds and hang out with the boys a little bit before he leaves. But that team's going to be sick. David Villa, Frank Lampard, and Pirlo. Jeez, that makes Toronto's 3 look terrible.
We'll have to see what happens when they start coming in.
Well, hopefully Jovinko stays being the best Italian in MLS, because once Pirlo comes, I don't know.
Pirlo's a little... He's getting a little long in the tooth there.
Yeah, I know, but the MLS gives you like 5 extra years of superstardom.
Oh, we'll have to see.
Look at David Beckham.
It'll be nice to see the teammates go up against each other.
Yeah.
And in Toronto, a huge Italian population here. It should be a great game. So, I mean, we're talking soccer, we're talking baseball, hockey. What have we missed? I mean, like I said, it's just been a crazy... An end of an era, is it?
What happened?
Roland Garros.
Oh, yeah.
Again, a couple surprising matches.
Rafa ejected early.
Mind you, he did
King
lose.
King of Clay.
Did lose to the number one player in the world.
Who then lost
in the finals to Rinka. That I didn't see coming.
No, not in 4 sets.
No, not like that. He just wasn't on his game. And I so want him to win.
Yeah?
The French Open. A French Open.
Well, yeah, because he's got 3 of the 4 or 4 of the 5.
3 out of the 4.
3 out of the 4, right?
3 out of 4 majors. And a lot of those 3. He's just missing it for the season. And I honestly thought that he had the best chance to get all 4 Grand Slams in the same calendar year.
Ooh.
Because he had already won the Australian, and if he had won the French, he's the favorite now for the U.S. Open, and well, Wimbledon in the next month, and then the U.S. Open after, he would be the favorite as well. So, but that's not happening this year. Sorry about that, Djokovic. But Nadal, you know, 9 out of 11 French Opens.
Yeah, his career is really interesting when you think about it. I mean, compared to a guy like Federer, who was just dominant, period. He, like, went everywhere and won.
Well, he's only won once in the French Open.
Sure, but that's his weakness. So you can credit him that.
No, that, and this is the thing that kills me about when it comes to people talking about Federer.
Well, because he played Nadal.
Exactly.
No, I know.
You know how many finalists he has? He always finished second.
Cole Mickelson, call Vijay Singh. You know, all those guys played fantastic, and it was because Tiger Woods was way better than them. They lost. But Nadal has so many majors, but like 9 of them are in France.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he is the king of clay. And he's infectious to watch. I actually enjoy watching him out of all top four. I think he's the most fun.
Most animated.
Yeah. His shots are crazy. But I don't think he's going to be as well remembered as like Federer. And I think Djokovic has a chance to be more dominant in the remainder of his career.
I agree.
Than Nadal, because Djokovic tends to seem like the guy who can win everywhere. It just depends on whether or not, you know, he can push through all 4 or 5 days. It doesn't seem like it matters where he's playing, and that's really cool to watch.
Like I said, right now, up until that final, didn't look like there's anybody in the world that can press him.
No.
You know, and that can touch in terms of
when
he's in his game.
Yeah.
He's on his game.
Yeah.
And there's no stopping him. So, we'll have to see in terms of the number of slams he winds up winning. But yeah, I think Federer, Djokovic, much, much better rounded tennis players
right.
in terms of different surfaces. That doesn't take anything away from what Nadal can do on clay.
No.
I mean, even on any of the other tournaments in grass Wimbledon, I think Borg has the record. Oh, no, Federer has 6 now.
Yeah.
And 5 in a row. And I know Borg had 5 in a row at Wimbledon as well at one point. So it's been... Yeah, nobody has seen anything in terms of what Nadal can do on clay.
Yeah. Another actual surprise this last week was Tiger Woods shot an 85 at the Memorial Tournament at Jack Nicklaus's course. Do you know what an 85 is?
I know it's probably a little bit more than your normal par 70, par 72.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Tiger Woods could have played with a couple of my buddies and, like, maybe owed somebody a beer, because I have a couple of buddies who can shoot, like, 80s, like, 78s. I could not believe it, man. Like, it's kind of sad to watch, only because, you know this the term, oh, how the mighty have fallen? You usually stop watching them after.
Yep.
But have you ever seen a golf tournament where Tiger Woods plays good or bad? The coverage is the same. So it's very painful because the whole time you're like, oh my God, he's going to chunk it. And then he like snap hooks it and chunks it. And you're like, what the hell is happening to you?
Why do we keep watching? Why do they keep showing? And I mean,
it's painful.
He grew golf.
Yeah.
Exponentially.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like all by himself. That they're still going with the same formula. I mean, he's still a story. And
yeah.
At 85, wow. You know, like I said, it's sad. It's like a racehorse breaking a leg, you know, just take him behind the barn.
Yeah, just...
And put him down. Yeah.
I mean, you know what it reminded me of? Did you watch the game where Jordan had 2 points against the Raptors with the Wizards?
I believe so.
Do you remember any portion of that game?
No.
Okay,
no.
Exactly. But... It's like, what I do remember watching is like, who is that guy? Like, why are you doing this? And it's like the same thing we were seeing with Martin Brodeur over this last season, like in the first couple months. Like, me and you were sitting here like, what are you doing?
It's
like, maybe you just need to stop.
No, it's like you said, it's one of those things, and it's hard for athletes to do that. But looking at it, saying, and I think one of the reasons why I completely blocked out that Wizards game is you're not the Michael Jordan I want to remember.
Right, exactly.
You know, completely mental block out there. And, you know, I remember the Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I remember the 18-foot fadeaway. You know, that's Michael Jordan.
Right.
Not what he was. Not what he was with the Wizards. And said, don't want to see the same thing with Brodeur. You don't want to see the same thing here with Tiger either.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
And it's funny because he's come out and said before that he doesn't care about the 18 majors. And it's like, so you want to miss cuts? Because if you don't care, you'll stop. But I think he gives a lot about winning those 18 and then passing Jack. But if he's going to do it like this, man, you're going to have to, it's going to be like a blue moon seeing Tiger Woods winning four straight days to win a major.
Well, and you see, here's what I don't know. And I don't know, what I mean by I don't know is I don't know what's better. Do you have a situation where to play better in the majors, you have to play week in, week out? Or in a situation where, you know, you don't play every other tournament. You take time off, you work on your game, and you play the majors. Almost like, in wrestling vernacular, having The Undertaker come back and just wrestle WrestleMania, the one big match.
Because
he can't take it, you know, anymore. So I'm not sure if that works out better for him that way or not. But if it is, take the rest, get your training, and only play the majors and see what happens. Not only play, but play a pre-tournament warm-up kind of thing or two tournaments and build up to it. But don't play 52 weeks of the year.
Or take a year and actually get a swing coach and develop a swing and, you know, use what you learn.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been a fantastic edition of the Pop and Joe podcast. I can say that because I'm Pop.
And I'm Joe.
And he's Joe. So thank you, first of all, to Flip and to Ali Khan for showing up today on a special edition from Sports from the Six. Shout out to them.
All aboard!
And hopefully we continue to have more crazy, crazy weeks of sports. It's been awesome.
Yeah, great wrap-up. Great time. We'll see you next week.
Be good, boys.